Hello and welcome to Spoon, the Tick versus the podcast, the internet's only, amazingly, the internet's only podcast dedicated solely to the Tick. Today we are starting out with something pretty special. This is an exclusive as far as I know. Unless the Nerdist has beat us to the punch, we might be able to scoop the Nerdist.
Wouldn't be the first time.
Yes. joining me, I'm Tim. I'm here with my good friend Steven.
Hello, citizens.
And my more gooder friend, Derek.
Ow. Hello, everybody.
But we are here with online with Arthur from the new Amazon pilot for the live action Tick. We are with Griffin Newman. Say hello, Griffin.
Hello, Griffin.
Yay.
And let me ask you, Griffin, is this the first quote unquote press you've done for the show?
I don't know when this will air in relation to other things. I've been starting to do some podcasts to promote it.
Okay.
So you know, as a general thing, the way Amazon does their series is they make a pilot first, mm-hmm. and then they put the pilot online and sort of publicly anyone can watch it, and they take the temperature to see you know, whether or not there seems to be an interest in continuing that as a series.
Okay.
So right now we're like, at the time that we're recording this, we're a couple weeks away from when the pilot's going to drop. And so I'm in the mode of trying to do as much as I can to get the word out about the pilot. So I've been recording a lot of podcasts, but I don't know which will come out first or when. But this is the most important interview. This is the most topical, relevant interview I'm doing, certainly.
You're talking to the people.
Yeah. Your people. Yeah. Yeah. Most of the other podcasts I'm ostensibly on to talk about something else, and then I have to shoehorn in 10 minutes of plugging for the Tick.
Yeah.
And this is a podcast about the Tick. So you guys take the cake.
Yeah, sweet.
You don't have to spend that time. Like, remember the thing?
Yeah. No, I hate remembering things. Yeah.
So tell us a little bit about yourself. Where did you grow up? Tell us a little bit. Give us a little like nickel tour of your life.
Yeah. I'm a born and raised New Yorker. I grew up in New York City, was raised in the city, still live in the city because I'm stubborn. And this city has a pretty good habit of ruining people's ability to live anywhere else. But I always was just obsessed with movies and TV and comedy and comic books and all of that, and was never able to sort of get beyond all of that in terms of my interests or my aspirations. I think I just wanted to go into this field just because I didn't understand anything else. Yeah. I didn't know how to do anything else, but didn't understand what other things were. I was pretty single-minded as a child. But I started doing stand-up when I was like 10 years old. And I would do stand-up in comedy clubs when I was like 10 years old. And then from there sort of got into doing, you know, writing more stuff. And like, I was the kid in high school. I was like Jason Schwartzman in Rushmore, where I was just constantly like writing plays and making little movies and starting too many clubs and failing out of all my academic classes. And then I dropped out of film school because I thought that maybe someday someone would hire me to play a superhero, which for like 9 years everyone told me was a stupid thought. And I've, you know, over the last 9 years or so, been acting and doing stand-up and all that sort of stuff. I host my own podcast. I mean, just sort of throwing stuff at the wall. But this is definitely the apex of what I was aspiring to in a thousand different ways is playing Arthur.
Yeah. Were you prior to getting the role as Arthur, were you familiar with the Tick property? And if so, where did you get your introduction to the Tick?
Oh yeah, I very much so. I'm a young gentleman, a disgustingly young person. I'm 27.
It's a wee boy.
So my first introduction, when I was growing up, actually, my mom wouldn't let me watch the Tick cartoon show. My mom was like I was the first child, and she was very overprotective about anything, especially superhero shows she thought were too violent, which came back to bite her in the ass in a pretty big way. Was old enough to choose my own media and then only wanted to watch stuff about superheroes and never grew out of that. But yeah, so I missed the cartoon show. I mean, maybe snuck an episode or two here or there. I knew about The Tick, and it always seemed cool and obviously sort of smarter and edgier and odder than the other superhero shows that I wasn't allowed to watch.
Yeah,
it seemed like the most exotic. And then when the Warburton show started in 2001, my brother and I were obsessed with that. And my brother and I were very different people at the time. We've become a little closer. And especially he had no interest in superhero stuff. But that was like the one show that both of us really kind of both loved. And we watched all, you know, 8 televised episodes together live when it aired and became obsessed. And then I went back to my local video store and found all the VHSs they had of The Old Tick and watched it then. So I became a fan sort of backwards through that. And the comics were something I got into when this project started. I maybe read 1 or 2 issues here or there, but I was definitely a fan of both TV series in a major way, starting you know, post-Warburton show.
All right. Well, that's good. Yeah, I think for us here on the show, a lot of us, like, I got introduced to The Tick initially through the comic, and then the cartoon is really where I got my fangs into it, I guess, and really, really got into that cartoon more so than anything that's come before or since. But I can kind of understand where you're coming from. You're being a little younger. The Warburton one is really, I guess that would be more up your alley, just based on your age.
Well, I would say it's the touchstone for me, and certainly not now that I've done my research into every single nook and cranny of the Tick universe. It was just sort of maybe my gateway.
Yeah.
Because it was the first one I got into. But it is a thing I like about the Tick as a property is that I think all the versions are different in their own sort of interesting way. I keep on seeing this, and no one's corrected me on this yet, but I can't think of another instance in history where you have one creative force like Ben who has been in control of every version of this property and has really kind of reconceptualized it every time for the time it's being made in and the medium and everything, you know?
Yeah.
He's sort of like playing the hits. Like every time he brings it into a new area, he does something different with it.
I guess with him being he does writing for television shows and other animated properties, and sometimes he's a gun for hire. So I think that has probably allowed him to adapt his ideas and to make them current and to mold them, as you're saying, for whatever time period that he's presenting them in.
Yeah, and I think he also is, to his credit, not someone who wants to just like. He's not reviving the Tick so that he can relive his glory days and sort of cash in on like, hey, remember how good that thing was I did 20 years ago? You know, he's reviving it because he has new ideas of what to do with it. And a lot of it is, you know, the thing that's so interesting about the Warburton show, and once again, that was my entry point, but I kind of probably look to the cartoon now maybe more as my touchstone and then the first 12 Edlund issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that's so interesting was when that Warburton show started, the modern superhero movie revival hadn't really happened yet. I mean, you had the first X-Men movie, but it was a year before Spider-Man came out. It was a year before, you know, everything sort of started. The floodgates broke, so to speak. And so it was like a show ostensibly sold to adults about superheroes at a time where there wasn't really a kind of collective reference base for superheroes in that kind of way, especially in live action. So, you know, it had to kind of be more of like a parody and like a sitcom about superheroes. And they weaponized the kind of joke of like, well, we have them talking about the fight scenes that you don't see and all of that sort of stuff. But I think Ben had this kind of itch to do like a proper big live action version that's even closer, I think, to the original comics than the cartoon show.
Yeah.
So that's hopefully what this show is.
That's a great point. I only thought of Jim Henson, and I mean, he's obviously been dead for almost 25 years, but in the time that he was in control, he brought different iterations of the Muppets, and they all seemed to land, you know, that were appropriate to their time and place.
Yeah, well, let's hope Ben is the new Jim Henson. Let's hope the same level of success ahead of us.
But if he comes down with a cold, please send him to at least a walk-in clinic. Please.
Just go buy him some Robitussin. That's all we ask.
Every day, yeah. No, I've sent Ben a lifetime supply of aspirin and Tylenol.
But then that'll make his blood too thin.
Yeah, I mean,
You've overcorrected.
This is why I called you guys. I need these tips. I need this help. Yeah.
I think we all need to go back and watch the Dinosaur Neil episode.
Yes. Yeah.
And Arthur will explain it to us.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah.
So you're an actor. You get I'm assuming your agent or somebody calls you, or you pick up whatever the trade is, and you see there's an audition for some new superhero show. Do you know that you're auditioning for The Tick, or did you get a call saying, "Hey, they're making The Tick," or did someone on the production say, "Hey, they're making The Tick. Come and check this out"? How did you into this role?
It was an email. It wasn't a secret thing, because I've gotten that before. I auditioned for the new Ninja Turtles movie a couple years back, and at the time it was, you know, the audition said it was a Untitled Brothers movie.
You tried out for Krang. You got really fat and out of shape. Very dyed yourself pink.
But they were using sort of code names for everything.
Yeah.
The scene they gave you to audition with, they changed the character names. But if you knew anything, it was pretty clear it was Ninja Turtles.
Yeah.
And there are cases where it's like that, where they, you know, and sometimes my agent will say, "Hey, they're saying it's this, but it's really this." But this was a case where the email just said The Tick. And I got sort of just in my inbox the subject heading, Tick Audition. And I went, whoa, that's cool. Because I had heard, much like you guys, for years that they were talking about bringing it back. And as a fan, I wanted to see it brought back, you know, cautiously optimistic, but wasn't sure if it was ever going to happen. So just to get the email and go, oh, it looks like it's happening, I wonder what part they're having me audition for. And then I open the email, it says for Arthur, and it was, you know, a complete shock and full of excitement to even get the opportunity, knowing that I was a million steps away from getting the job, but that I was going to get my shot because it was, you know, a property I'm such a big fan of, and a character was, you know, Arthur was always sort of the guy. Mm-hmm. That I related to, as I think a lot of Tick viewers, you know, are more similar to Arthur than they are to Tick.
He's the everyman, I guess.
He's the everyman, yeah.
He's got to pay the bills.
Yeah, exactly. And there was the note attached to the email that the casting director, Felicia Fasano, was pushing me hard for it. I had auditioned for her before, and she liked me. So there was sort of the forwarded note from my agent saying, "Hey, just so you know, Felicia's really into the idea of casting you." So I went into it knowing that I had one person who was, for whatever reason, trying to convince them to cast me from the get-go. And from there, they didn't have a casting director in New York, so I put myself on tape with my manager's assistant. And then they sent the tape out to LA, and then I got an email back saying that Ben wanted to meet with me. And Ben and I got coffee and just sort of talked about comedy and about TV and about superheroes and sort of just general philosophies on everything more than the character specifically. I mean, I think we talked about it a little bit, but it was just sort of, I guess, trying to see if we approach things from the same angle.
Okay.
And then I think, you know, Ben was, you know, it was like a bit of a meet cute, you know, romantic comedy thing. And then after that, it was just, you know, There were maybe 2 months of sort of having to go through all the channels and jump through all the hoops, because there are a lot of people you have to one by one convince that you're the guy for the thing.
Yeah.
Especially this show is more focused on Arthur. So for me being like, you know, a dramatically unknown person and largely untested in the eyes of like a big network, you know, there are a lot of people who need to be convinced. And so you do one thing and then they go, "Great, great, great. But can he do this as well?" And then you have to do a different audition to show them this side of what you did. So it was like 2 or 3 months of going through everything. And then, it's when I got the part, which I still kind of can't believe.
That's really awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. But it
did
was
you...
nice because what were you going to say? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, like, did you have to sign like an NDA and you couldn't discuss any of this stuff during this time frame? Or...
No, definitely not. I told everyone about it. I could not keep my cool about it. Anyone who would listen, you know, I tried not to. Maybe I didn't tell everyone about it because I didn't want to have to tell 1,000 people that I didn't get the part if I didn't. But it was pretty hard for me to keep my cool. And I was also, obsessively reading the comics at that point.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like I said, I hadn't really read them before. So from the moment I got that first email, I went out and bought all the trades and sort of just started digging through them and rereading them while I was every night going home and rewatching the cartoons. So the 2-3 months when I was trying to get the part, and then after that, there were maybe 2 months between when I got the role and when we started filming. So throughout that whole time, I was, you know, just some dork lunking around like a bunch of heavy trade paperbacks. So a lot of people would stop me and go like, oh, the tick, that's great. Man, do you hear they're doing a new thing? And it's like very hard when someone says that to you.
Yeah.
Not go like, yeah, I might be Arthur, you know? I don't want to jinx myself, but it's possible.
I don't want to say they're going to call the show Arthur, but I think they're going to call it The Tick.
Yeah. But there was like sort of 5 months where I was just, most of my mental energy was being spent on The Tick, you know, watching stuff and reading stuff and thinking about it and just crossing my fingers and hoping that they'd hire me, which they did, surprisingly.
Now, you know, going into this that there, and you, I don't know how involved you are on the internet and reading fan boards, but there have been some images. Yeah. There have been some images released. We haven't seen you in a superhero costume, and I don't know if that's going to be a reveal on the show. But there have been other costumes on other heroes, including the Tick, and there has been some debate about that sort of stuff. Are you prepared for that kind of criticism, even if it's something that you don't really have a say in, say costume design or things like that?
Yeah, you know, I don't know if you can ever totally be prepared for it. I have been at most points of my life one of those people on the message boards being angry about other stuff.
That's exactly what I was going to suggest. He probably not so long ago was also registering those kinds of opinions.
I mean, that's a lot yesterday, you know? I mean, I'm posting stuff about other things. I mean, that's the kind of guy I am, and I care, you know, as much about these sorts of things as the people who watch them, because I am someone who watches them. I just now somehow have become part of one of them. I think, you know, the first photo that was released of I hope I'm not talking out of school when I say this, but the first photo that was released of the costume that there was a lot of sort of negative response to, no one was really happy with. Like, that wasn't anyone's choice for the first photo to be released, and I think there was kind of a miscommunication, and it sort of slipped through the channels. 'Cause these costumes are such a weird thing to do. I mean, I had to do, like, 7 fittings, and, you know, the first time someone brings you into a room and they go put on a superhero costume, and I look in the mirror and I see myself and I look like a superhero, you know, I start choking up and I go, oh, my God, this is amazing. And the costume director... The costume designer just went, oh, God, it's terrible. We'll fix it, you know? And it's time after time they go in. I go, it looks good now, right? And they go, no. Everyone's going to rip it apart on the internet. And then they take, you know, 5 inches out of here and add 4 inches here. And it's constantly a process. And there's, you know, about how it moves, about how it feels, how much freedom it gives you as an actor, and how it's going to look in different lighting conditions and all that sort of stuff. So I think the first photo that was released was you know, not a super heroic moment for Peter, who I think when people see the performance, they're going to be very relieved and very excited that it very much is a classic Tick performance. But, you know, he was sort of mid-sentence and he wasn't really standing in any sort of way. And his eyes were kind of half closed and it was very casual and he wasn't smiling. And so, like, that gave the wrong sort of energy. He's in an apartment that's very brightly lit, which is really unforgiving to the costume. Whereas, you know, in a lot of the scenes and some of the other pictures that have been released, it's, you have more sort of shadows and lighting, not to hide the costume, but to work with the costume because it's designed to work in certain lighting conditions. And then, the added factor is a big part of doing these kinds of shows is, having to digitally go back in and sort of fix up the costumes because they're all the sort of zippers and seams and all those sorts of things. And the photo that was released didn't have any of those touch-ups on it, which I think is why there was this larger batch of photos released in the last week to sort of try to reassure people of what it looks like more generally. Because that photo was just literally taken in the room on the day, mid-sentence, you know?
Yeah.
I think Tim, if I could I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt.
This is obviously the big subject to have to sort of discuss and not try to, but I think, you know, in terms of the design of the costume, how different it is, I hope that when people see the show, they'll sort of understand why it looks that way. Not that there's literally like a scene where they explain the costume, but I think sort of aesthetically and tonally and in terms of how it frames the characters, the costume sort of makes sense. And in terms of my costume, I know all the pictures that have been released right now are me just in civilian plain clothes, which has left a lot of people worried. I do wear the moth suit in the pilot. The pilot starts earlier than any version of the Tick has before, because every past version of the Tick, the first time we see Arthur, he's in his costume. You know, in the two previous TV shows, the introduction is him at his job, you know, as an accountant sitting at the desk in the costume, and the boss comes in and goes, "What are you wearing?" And this series starts a little earlier than that, so we can build to that moment. So I do wear the costume. The pilot will show how I get into the costume. I don't think they want to release any pictures for the sake of kind of dramatic effect when you watch it. I mean, hopefully it will be a really exciting moment seeing the costume for the first time in the show once we get to it. And then, you know, if we're lucky enough to get a season, you know, fingers crossed, I hope I never have to take off the costume.
Once I put it on, you're wearing it now.
Yeah, he is. Steve, you had a question?
Yeah, well, that is a very good preemptive, I don't want to say defense, but and it's good of you to expect reason and logic from the internet at large.
Yeah, I'm probably foolish in assuming that, but I try my best to contextualize things and tell people to wait off. You know, if you hate it when you see it, that's one thing, but, you know, wait and see what we're trying to do first, maybe.
If there's one thing the internet's good at, it's context.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, well, I don't know if Griffin, this is Steve in Bethlehem. Now, I don't know if you read your own press and stuff. I mean, obviously, there's a lot more about to come. Mm-hmm. But before we were talking with you today, I pointed out to the guys a couple of message board comments on IMDb, which are all favorable of you. And I don't know if have you recently gone there and looked at yourself and seen what some of the people have been.
We're talking my IMDb message board specifically?
Yes.
Yeah, I think most of those things are posted by my friends who were trying to mess
Well,
with
one
me.
Does go back about 8 years, but great actor or greatest actor.
Yeah, that's definitely one of my friends. I think that was my friend Owen. Yeah. For a long time, you know, there was no activity on my IMDb message board, so people would start threads, you know, debating and pumping me up and stuff like that. So yeah, in that case, you know, don't believe the hype because it was right. Just to sort of mess with me.
Okay.
That's
so
all right. Our two reviews are obviously from friends of our show as well.
Right, so right.
Yeah. We know how that goes.
Yeah.
So going back to the costume, I remember when the Warburton one came out. Mm-hmm. I remember myself specifically being, what the hell is that? And you see his whole face and I don't know what's going on with Deflator Mouse. He looks something and all that sort of stuff. So, but then it kind of grows on you as you watch it. So I think even some of those people that might, based on still shots, as you watch the show and as you grow to appreciate the characterizations, I think that stuff will all fall to the wayside. Because I now when I watch the live action, I don't even think about how the costumes look necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, change is tough, and especially, you know, like, us Tick fans are, you know, it's a weird little property that I think Tick fans get very protective of, because it's not the X-Men, you know? Like, we sort of have to guard our treasure. And it's, you know, it's alarming, and you sit at the edge of your seat hoping they don't mess it up this time. And I know, I mean, I think people will be happy when they see my costume, but I definitely, the first time I saw it, I was a little taken aback, because it had changed some certain elements, but then the more time I spent with it, I sort of went like, this is quintessentially like an Arthur costume. You know, it's coming at it from a slightly different angle in the same way I think the Tick costume is. It's still a big blue guy. You know, he's still got the antennas, and it's even more accurate in a way because you have the face mask, but there are some differences. And I also think the big thing is that, like, the Tick has always been commenting on what was around it at the time, you know? So when Ben originally created the comics, it was commenting on, like, Frank Miller's stuff that he was publishing and Alan Moore's stuff. And that was the aesthetic and that was the tone and that's what, you know, all the ninjas and everything. Mm-hmm. And sort of it started out very dark and shadow heavy and all of that. And the cartoon show was really referencing, you know, and working off of the X-Men cartoon and the Spider-Man cartoon and all the other superhero cartoons that were on in the same time. In both cases, he was, like, borrowing the aesthetics of the thing that he was kind of satirizing. And I think if you look at what the superhero landscape is right now and, you know, the CW shows and the Marvel Netflix shows and, you know, you need to have costumes that are in line with the sensibilities. If you're going to be able to comment on what's going on in superhero stuff, I think you kind of have to like walk the walk in order to talk the talk. But it's, you know, there's been a lot of kind of overblown information about this idea that it's quote unquote darker, quote unquote grittier. And it's like, you know, it's darker and grittier because it's satirizing darker and grittier things. But it's a ridiculous show.
Yeah,
I mean, it's a very absurd, ridiculous show that's very much in the spirit of what The Tick is. And, you know, the comics were darker and grittier than the cartoon was or the Warburton show was. And by nature of the fact, I know each of my answers here is like 15 minutes long.
That's okay.
That's quite all right.
I haven't been able to weigh in on all these things publicly for a while now.
It sounds like it's been building up. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, swing to myself. Let it out. Yeah, yeah. But, you know, the cartoon show was a cartoon show. It was on Saturday mornings. I mean, they were limited in what they could sort of do because of, you know, it was on a channel called Fox Kids, you know, a programming block called Kids, Fox Kids. And the sitcom was like a primetime sitcom, you know, the Warburton show. And so this, I think he is finally has the space and the sort of creative freedom, the lack of, you know, content restrictions to be able to do something that's more in line with the comics. So, I, you know, it's not a grim, dark version. Like, we're not doing Zack Snyder's The Tick.
I'd like to see that, though.
There's the soundbite. That's the headline.
Yeah, here we go.
We find out the Tick's mother's name is actually Martha.
Yeah, Martha.
Everyone's name is Martha in this version. That's the big point. It's a group of Marthas. But yeah, I think it, you know, I understand all the panic, and I'll say even when I got that first email, you know, about auditioning for it, before I read the script, I went like, God, I mean, are they playing with fire by trying to do this again? Like, what are the chances that it works again? But I read the script, and I really, it's one of my favorite scripts I've ever read. And I'm not just saying that because they hired me. In fact, you know, the only thing I now have against the show is that they hired me. Other than that, yeah, I think it's really great. But I think once you see it and you absorb it in context, it will hopefully all make sense. The costumes, the tone, all of that stuff.
Very nice. I am super excited for this show. I really am. And I can't wait to see it. I do have one question. I want you to be very honest.
Please, yeah.
When you were putting on the tights, did you specifically request that they make your unit bigger?
No. I mean, okay.
Make it smaller, guys. It's embarrassing. Yeah, it's like a con. It's really
I'll say this. I didn't, and I maybe regret it. I have a sketch comedy group here in New York City, Nipsey, and we have sort of a private email chain with stuff. So I sent everyone when I had the first photo of me in the costume. I was really proud. I got, you know, we did a promotional photo shoot. And it's got dramatic lighting, and it looks like it's, you know, I'm one of the X-Men or something. And I somehow, you know, you take enough photos, you take 500 photos, one of them you end up looking cool. Mm-hmm. So I got one where I'm in the right pose and I'm catching the light in the right way and the costume looks great. And I sent it to all of them, and immediately all of them just zoomed in on my crotch and the lack of definition in it. So we have this email thread that's just like 40 different memes that everyone has made over my like rounded off Ken doll crotch area. So yeah, in retrospect, maybe I wish I had asked for more. And the Tick's got quite a codpiece in this, but I'm pretty smooth down there.
Well, what you need to do is just sneak a vacuum tube in, and just when no one's looking, just put it down there and just like walk in. Hey, everybody.
It's a cucumber wrapped in tinfoil. Yeah.
Yeah, just go down to craft services. Just act like nothing's.
Yeah. Hello, Tim's experience from when he was briefly a child star.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, yeah, that's I'm really excited. Now the show premieres on Amazon. What is the date of the premiere?
August 19th. The pilot goes online. It's a half hour pilot. You don't need to be a Prime member. Anyone can watch it. It should be on the main homepage. If not, you know, click on the video tab amongst the 5 trillion other tabs that Amazon has. But it's totally free to watch. It'll be online for 30 days until September 19th. And the basic gist is it's not like a voting thing per se, but they, you know, let people watch it. They see how many people watch it. I think they make you fill out a very short survey at the end of it, just kind of a thumbs up, thumbs down, would watch again kind of survey. And, you know, they look to Twitter, they look to message boards, they listen to podcasts, whatever. I mean, they sort of just take the temperature and see if it seems like there is an audience that wants to watch more of it. So there'll be that month of deliberation, and then hopefully by, like, the end of September, beginning of October, we'll know whether or not we'll be doing a full season. And that would be premiering, I think, about a year from now. You know, it would take a little while to do the full 10 episodes, but yeah.
Can I ask, does this new because we are three Generation X guys, so we're used to the older model of, you know, like a pilot debuts in the fall on television and the Nielsen ratings determine everything. Does this take less pressure off of you? Does it put more on? Do you think that your chances are better in this format release than they would be if this was just like to debut on CW or something?
Well, now you're going to get a really long answer. I mean, I've thought of this a lot because, you know, I mean, all of it is always terrifying. Like, the anxiety of being on a pilot never goes away. And I've been on maybe four or five pilots before this, and only one of them got picked up. So I've dealt with a lot of different types of waiting in different situations, on network, on cable, different sort of things. The shorter answer I'll give is I find a real relief in the fact that no matter what we made is going to be seen, you know? Yeah. So whether or not we get to do a full season is still to be determined. I certainly hope so. But I've done pilots that you put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into. You fight, you know, really hard to get the part. You fight really hard to keep the part, to do it the way you want to. And everyone works really hard. And then six guys in a boardroom, you know, turn their thumbs down. And then it just gets swept under a rug like it never existed. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I find the real relief in the fact that, like, the people get to see it, and it's, you know, theoretically a more democratic thing. And if people like it, we'll get to make more of it. And, you know, if they don't, then maybe, you know, we didn't deserve to make more of it. I mean, there's some sort of relief in that. That having been said, when you're not dealing with a system like this, things move a lot faster. So I'm in a position now where, like, you know, we finished filming 2 months ago. We're still a couple weeks out from it going online, which means we're like 2 months away from me knowing about it. So it's like 5 months of having made this thing and feeling so proud of it and excited about it and just sort of waiting. And, you know, I think Amazon likes it a lot. They're behind it, but ultimately it's now in the hands of the people. So I hope the people and I have similar taste. That's the short version.
Thank you for that.
Yes. Yeah. What was my question? I had one more question.
I admire you showing restraint, Tim, and not asking him what makes him tick.
Yeah. I'd
put him outside for that one.
I did want to ask, like, the cast that's on there, like working with Peter Serafinowicz and Jackie Earle Haley. What was it like to work with those guys? Were they were they really cool to you on set, or were they sort of, did you get to know them, or is it just kind of one of those things where you sort of went in? Yeah, well, yeah. Tell us how phony those guys are.
Yeah, they're dicks. They're big phonies. No, they're both great. I mean, you know, I say to my friends a lot, I feel like 75% of the job is not being intimidated by the people you work with. Like, that's mm-hmm. the hardest part, is being able to be in a scene with, like, someone like Serafinowicz and not constantly be going, oh my God, I'm in a scene with Darth Maul, or I'm in a scene with, you know.
Yeah.
Whatever. I mean, a thousand things. Brian Butterfield, and, you know, I love, like, all of his work. Yeah, they're both, like, really excellent people. In addition to being insanely talented actors, they're both really, really excellent, decent, thoughtful people, and are very collaborative, both, which is really nice. You know, I've worked with some actors who are nice and who are very talented, but kind of just come in and do their own thing and clock out. And, you know, Peter and I were constantly sort of checking in with each other, going, like, did you like that take? Did you think that was good? That help you if I did this, in both directions.
Mm-hmm.
And especially when a show is based around a partnership between two people.
Like, yeah.
It's very nice. I mean, I think Peter, you know, went out of his way to try to form that kind of bond between the two of us, which he did. Or he's just pretending he likes me. But I'm certainly a big fan of him as a guy and loved working with him. And, you know, it's a tricky balance. I mean, the thing that Ben would always say when we were, you know, we worked really hard to not just do impressions of any of the past versions, you know, and try to make our own versions of the characters. But, you know, there's this thing that, like, you know, Adam West Batman and Michael Keaton Batman and Christian Bale Batman and, you know, even Affleck Batman to a degree, they're all very different performances, but they all sort of feel like Batman, you know?
Yeah.
You couldn't get more different between Adam West and Christian Bale, but they both fundamentally feel like they reflect elements of who Batman is. And so the thing we talk about on set is there's almost sort of just like a pitch where it feels right, where you just go like, oh, that sounds like Arthur. Not that it sounds like Rob Paulson or Mickey Dolenz or, you know, David Burke, but it sounds like Arthur. And there was a similar thing with The Tick and Arthur where we'd sometimes get a take and we go, that sounded like The Tick and Arthur. Not just us respectively, but the way we were sort of bouncing off each other. And Ben would always say, "It's the key is they're an old married couple. That they've been married for a long time and they hate each other, but they still love each other enough to stay together, you know?"
It's like Bert and Ernie.
Yeah.
From the Dylan moment, the Pigeon.
Yeah, it can't be together, can't be apart.
and so, the Parents Television Council.
Yeah. So, you know, it's we had to work a lot to get that feeling right, but I think we did. And Jackie is just terrifying. I mean, you know, I was so scared meeting him just because he's such a legendary performer and so many of his performances are so deeply horrifying. But he's like the nicest, most mild-mannered, soft-spoken dude in the world and is always so friendly and, you know, interested, engaged in other people, open. And then you get him on set in the makeup. I don't know if you guys, you saw they've released the photos now of him in the terror costume,
yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they have.
He looks like this horrifying mummy, you know? And he's got these red eyes and this bloodshot skin and all of it. And he's doing this horrifying kind of deep guttural voice. And then the second they call cut, he just kind of puts on purple sunglasses and he goes, "Hey, can I get a latte?" You know, he just goes straight back into it, you know? It's a little disorienting talking to him in the makeup. In between takes, but they both, I mean, couldn't be better guys and better actors.
Between takes, did you lean forward with him in the terror costume and ask him, "What was Walter Matthau really like on the Bad News Bears?"
Yeah.
He's like, "Let me tell you about Waltie."
Well, that's the thing. You just want to ask those guys like everything, you know? I mean, well, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. So I like, you know, the first night Peter and I met when we had both been cast, but separately, we went out to get dinner one night and I just, within 20 minutes was at asking Phantom Menace questions. I mean, I couldn't hold back. You know, what was the experience of sitting there watching Phantom Menace for the first time being in Phantom Menace?
It's like, you know, we really want to know.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, that's a fulcrum moment for most people, yeah. Was the time they saw Phantom Menace and the dream died. You know? And I just sort of had to know, like, what does it feel like when you're part of it? I mean, you know, I asked him about that. I tried to hold back on a lot of other questions, but you know, that's the biggest reason I can throw out for people to go watch the show on Amazon and you know, review it favorably is so I get to get back on set with those guys and ask them more invasive questions about their careers.
I'll tell you, Mark Hamill did all the same things with the shows that he worked on when he was young. Like he would work with, you know, with Bob Hastings and those voice actors when he was on like I Dream of Jeannie and doing those shows and working with Alec Guinness. So he did all that stuff. So you're in good company if you're sitting down with these people and asking them about their careers and all that sort of stuff. Mark Hamill did the same exact stuff, and he will be the first person to tell you that's how you get experience. That's how you learn, is by talking with the people who have been there before you.
So. Let's hope so. Yeah, let's hope I'm not just pissing everybody off.
We need to recast Arthur. Is Jonathan Lipnicki doing anything now?
Yeah, it's always down to me and Lipnicki. We're always fighting it out for the roles.
Now, it's this will be one of the last questions I ask because we're going to sort of wind this down. We don't want to take up all your time. But Steven here on our podcast is a very talented actor and comedian, and I was looking at the person who plays Dot, Valerie Curie, and I want to play matchmaker for Steven here. Now
I will say she is recently and happily married.
Well, no matter. There's laws that can bring things up.
Yeah, I've held out thinner hopes than that.
Now, can you talk to the producers and the writers and see if they can cast Steve as Dinosaur Neil?
Oh, interesting.
And then Steven and Valerie, even if it's just on screen, It could be a two-episode arc where Steve destroys the city as an animated dinosaur, or they could just put him in like a Godzilla suit.
I'll bring the vacuum tube if that helps.
He's
if it helps.
Growing the Magnum PI mustache as he's listening to this.
Yeah. And then there could be an episode where Dinosaur Steve and Dot have a connection, and there we go. That's
this question it opens me up to talk about something else that's good to cover. The short answer is no, absolutely not.
You're a good friend, Griffin. Thank you.
Yeah, anytime. I got you. The longer answer is because this is a thing I think a lot of questions online are circulating around this is which characters can we use and which characters can't we? Because you know there's no. In the pilot so far, there is neither Deflator Mouse nor Pat Manuel. And the answer is Disney bought Fox Kids sometime in the early 2000s, I think, which is when Fox Family became ABC Family before it became Freeform.
Okay.
But Disney just bought the kids division of Fox. And so Disney now owns the rights to the cartoon show and only the cartoon show.
God, but they own the rights. They own everything.
They own everything. They own the rights to anything that was created in the cartoon show that appeared there first.
Wow.
Sony owns the rights to everything that was created in the live-action Warburton show, and Ben owns the rights to everything that was created in the comic. So if something was established in the comic first, it supersedes the other two shows.
Yeah.
Which is why Tick, Dot, Terror, Arthur have existed in every version because they were all in those first 12 issues before the cartoon show got picked up. So Dinosaur Neil, I believe, was created for the cartoon show.
Well, I guess we could call it Jurassic Steve.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah.
I'll be the whirling Scottish dervish. Something. I don't know.
Yeah. Good.
You could hypothetically pull a Batmanuel to Dinosaur Steve and call him, you know, Tyrannosaurus Bob or whatever his name is.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's possible, but Dinosaur Neil, for the time being, unless Disney feels like getting friendly, in that name and image, might be difficult to pull off.
I'm just opening up the Tick Circus Maximus here, and Steve
That's
could.
I mean, if people want to know which characters they can, you know, we have access to for the time being, they're all the characters covered in any of the Circus of the Mighty books are the ones to look at.
Yeah, Steve, you could play the Haunted Dome. The Guardian Angle, the Nihilist, or the City Libeler.
I'm open to any of those. Griffin, you've got my vote. If I have your vote.
Yeah. Yes. I
some CGI. He could be Thrakazog.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Thrakazog's in there. The ones that are kind of stolen by the Disney rights are most of the other supporting heroes. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the villains started in the comic book. So, Chairface Chippendale is on the table. Pineapple Pokopo's on the table. Thrakazog's on the table. There are a lot of good characters to use. Ben's being cagey. I mean, I'm like always asking him, like, hey, do you think there's any chance we'll use a, you know, I have like a long list of dudes I want to see on the show just as a fan.
I think with
well, maybe I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we could easily see Paul the Samurai finally, you know, realized on the big screen.
Hey, I pushed really hard for that one. I'll have you know. Who knows if it's going to have any effect? But I just think. With Daredevil season 2 being so much about the ninja stuff and incorporating Elektra in, I feel like it's a really good time for Paul the Samurai and Oedipus.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I've said that to him a number of times. Who knows? You know, Ben is a very can be hard to read at times. Very mysterious. There's a whole big universe chugging away up there, as you know, the Tick says in this new show we made. So, you know, I'm constantly offering, you know, I have a suggestion Dropbox of characters that I leave at Ben's doorstep to see who can. Yeah.
Very
Thank
nice.
Thank you for explaining that those intellectual property distinctions can get so confusing and so arcane.
They're so weird. Yeah, because it is. I mean, Disney doesn't own the Tick in any way, but they own that cartoon show and thus anything that is in the cartoon show and was only in the cartoon show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Hannibal series was similar. You know, like the Thomas Harris characters they could use, some from the novel, some from the original movies, but others, I don't know, some were left out.
Yeah, I'll say that Sony is also producing this new version. So technically, any of the characters like Batman UL that were on the Sony version could be in this version, which is not me inferring anything whatsoever.
We'll infer.
Yes. I don't know if there's any intention to use any of those characters, but all of that is in play, potentially, and the comic characters, certainly.
That's exciting.
Well, Griffin, thank you so much for coming on and talking about the show. Do you have like a Facebook fan page or Twitter or any of that kind of stuff that people can follow you, or
a podcast you'd like to plug?
Yeah, or a podcast.
Yes, I am on Twitter, Griff Lightning. It's like Grease Lightning, so it's GRIFFLIGHTNING. I have the least well-maintained Facebook fan page in the world, so I won't even promote that. But I have a podcast, which I highly recommend people listening to, called Blank Check, which is on the UCB network. And it's my buddy David Sims and I, and he is a film critic and writer for The Atlantic. And we go through directors' filmographies, like filmmakers who had a big success early on and then kind of got a blank check to make whatever they wanted and usually kind of flamed out after that. So it started as a Star Wars podcast going through the arc, you know, the epic rise and fall of George Lucas. And since then, we've covered the Wachowskis and M. Night Shyamalan and Cameron Crowe and James Cameron coming up next, who is actually the opposite of what I'm saying. He's someone who just kept on succeeding more and more the bigger the blank checks got.
I have to tell you, in doing research for this, I stumbled across that. I listened to the first episode and I listened to the most recent episode. And now I have to go download all of them because it is, honest to God, one of the funniest things I've listened to. In the most recent episode where Lucas is complaining about McDonald's hamburgers, I was getting in trouble at work because I was laughing so loud.
Well, thank you very much. That's a very nice endorsement. I will say I have listened to every episode of your guys' podcast.
Hey.
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah, in the time when I was absorbing Tick all the time 24/7, you know, and fighting for the role and preparing for the role and filming, I just wanted to absorb as much as I could. And a big part of that was I wanted to, you know, I'm a fan, but I only know and can speak for what I like about the Tick. So I wanted to get a sense of what meant something to other Tick fans, you know, which elements were important to them. And, you know, you guys have the distinction of being the only Tick podcast, as you always say. If there had been another one on iTunes, who knows if I would have listened, but
we're the best and the worst.
Yes. We would have rumbled in the streets by now.
Yeah, but I've listened to every episode because, you know, it was very important for me to be able to, or it was very helpful for me rather, to listen to you guys talk about the show and get a sense of like, okay, that's an important element. You know, these are the things we need to bring in, and you know, get a sense of what everyone else, what the Tick means to everybody.
Okay.
That may be the most flattering thing anyone's ever said to me, but I had a difficult childhood. But even
we'll just cut that part and send it to Steve on a loop so he can just listen to it over and over again.
Yeah, but thank you, gentlemen, for helping me prepare to play Arthur. I say that seriously.
That's what we're here to help you play prepare to play Arthur and whoever they cast in the actual series. We're helping that guy too. So. No, I'm kidding.
It's Lipnicki. Lipnicki's waiting. He's on the bench.
He's gonna have to lose some weight.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
He's no Tobey Maguire / David Paymer.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, thank you so much. Hopefully we'll be able to get you back on here and wax poetic a little bit more about the Tick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I can't wait to hear what you guys think when you see the pilot. And I'll throw out one more word of advice to your listeners. Because of how Amazon's metric aggregation, what have you, works, if you watch the show and then go pick up your laundry and then watch the second half of the pilot, you know, a week later, it will register as like, oh, that person stopped watching the show. And they might, in their algorithm, look at it as, oh, not enough interest. So I implore people, when you are getting ready to watch the pilot, make sure you have a nice, clean 30 minutes cut out. So you can watch it from beginning to end without interrupt.
Now that's so interesting. That seems like a disadvantageous given the way people's minds are today. You would think they would somehow be able to compensate for that.
Right? I think, you know, if they see that the same user watches the second half later, that helps. But what would help us the most is if you watch the whole thing in one go. When we get a season, you can watch it any way you want. So you can watch it upside down. You can watch 1 minute a day. But for now, if you know, I beg of you, please sit for 30 minutes and watch this thing.
That's good. That generally I'm in favor of, you know, people watching something all the way through in one sitting just to really grasp it.
Yeah.
It's just how often do they? Wow, okay.
In the end, we just want people to know Griffin lives in New York. You know how expensive it is to live in New York. He needs a consistent job.
I just moved into a new apartment. You guys got to help me out.
Those draft day checks are getting smaller and smaller, and vinyl has been canceled. Come on, people.
I'm out, baby. You know? I need this.
He needs this. So please. And I'm told that when you press play on Amazon, they send a drone just outside of your window to watch you. So keep your pants on, everyone.
Yeah, by all means. Yeah.
40% people watch The Tick pants free.
Yeah. You know, or rather I'll say, if the watching the pilot awakens certain urges in you, take your laptop into the bathroom, you know?
The drone can't follow you there.
Time and a place, you know? Just be aware. However you need to enjoy the show, whatever physical activities you need to perform while watching it, that's fine. Just be aware that Amazon is always watching.
So, well, all right. Until next episode, thank you, Griffin. Thank you, thank you. And
thank you so much for having me, guys.
And good luck.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yes.
You definitely have our support.
Yeah. Thank you very much. That means a lot.
The support of our 35 fans.
Yeah.
That'll change.
Skadoosh.